I would like to welcome everyone to the second session of our course on the journey of self-discovery. Yesterday, we briefly discussed about the importance of human form of life, how even though there are some things that are common between the human beings and the other living entities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, there are some things that are unique, special prerogative to the human life, and that is a higher intelligence provided with discriminative power to inquire, and that inquiry is to understand what are the real problems of life. And we discussed that true problems of life are birth, old age, disease and death, and miseries caused by one's own body and mind, caused by other living entities and natural disturbances. And we also discussed how just mere advancement, material advancement through technology in and of itself has not been able to address this. This is the real paradox of life. And therefore, there is a need to actually inquire about the cause of all suffering and the destination of life. And that is what we concluded yesterday. And that's what the purpose of transcendental knowledge is all about. In fact, the first word in the Vedanta Sutra, the first sutra, the first aphorism, the first formula is Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that we have got a human form of life, inquire about this truth. And therefore the need to understand, is there a cause behind this creation? Because if there is some entity who is responsible for this creation, we will find out why this whole creation was made the way it is made. And if it is no one, then it's a different thing. Then it is, you know, one's own. Everyone has their own way. And so therefore, that is the next question. So today we'll be discussing this. Two, is there really a creator behind this creation? If there is, we may inquire from that entity, why did you make this creation with all these manufacturing defects? And secondly, is scripture really the word of God? So the first question is, does really God exist, or has everything come by chance, which many of the scientists proclaim? There was a big bang and by chance everything came about. How relevant is it? How scientific it is? How logical is it? One time there was a village, and all the villagers decided to invite a saint who was living by nearby in the forest. So they all decided, they went to the saintly person and they said, why don't you come to our village and speak about God? So he came and he asked everyone, so how many of you believe in the existence of God? So everyone raised their hand. He said, oh, all of you believe in the existence of God? Then I don't think I need to speak. And he left. So the villagers were a little surprised. He says, what happened? We just raised our hands. Was it our fault? So next time they all talk to themselves. Next time we'll call him and nobody will raise their hand. So next time they called the saintly person, and this time he sat down and said, "So, do you all believe in the existence of God?" Nobody raised their hand. So he said, "Oh, none of you believe? Then there is no point in me speaking." And he left. This time they were more confused. And they said, "Hey, next time, half of you raise your hand and half of you don't." And the next time he came, after great reluctance, and then he said, "So, all of you believe in the existence of God?" Some of them raised, some of them didn't. "Oh, half of you believe, half of you don't. So those who believe, convince those who don't believe." And he's left. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this incident is most of our situation being educated in this academics, even though we may have very big degrees, most of our situation is like that. We are like cat on the wall. If someone asks us, "Do you believe in God?" "Well, maybe, yeah, maybe, no." If confronted and just tell me, "Really, do you?" Keep your hand on your chest and tell me, "Do you really believe in the existence of God?" We really are wondering, you know. Does really God exist? Where does He stay? Is He up there sending thunderbolts on people? Very scientifically, logically, systematically, can we give an explanation? Most of us fail there. Very few probably may say, but they will not be able to scientifically explain. I remember when I graduated, I won't say I was an atheist, something like an agnostic. It was fashionable to consider to be, you know, not believing in God. That means you are very scientific. So, after graduation, I took up post-graduation, and one of my friends went into private practice. And when he opened his clinic, he sent all of us an invitation. And when we went, we saw he had called a pujari to do some inauguration worship. And I asked my friend, "Hey, I thought we didn't believe in the existence of God and all that stuff." He said, "Ha yaar, par by chance wo hai to khush ho jaye na. Lakhon rupaya kharcha kiya building dhas gaya to. What if the whole building collapsed? In case there is God, let Him be satisfied." And then I realized, as they say, there are no atheists in foxholes. Similarly, most of us, even if we do believe, it's just out of fear that in case if He is there, let Him be satisfied. Let Him just continue to give His blessings. Otherwise, what is the need anyway? So really, when questioned, confronted, to explain it in a very scientific way, we all fail to give a satisfactory explanation about really does God exist? And if He does, who is that person? So let's discuss this a little. So proof. What is the proof? Because if you want to be very scientific, for everything you have to give proof. So what is the proof of the existence of God? For every urge, there is fulfillment provided in nature. Right? We see there are some natural urges in all the living entities. One urge in a human being is feeling thirsty. And to quench that thirst, nature has provided water. Another urge, natural urge, is hunger. And to satisfy that hunger, for various living entities, various kinds of foods have been provided in nature to satisfy that hunger. At a particular time in development of human beings and all of the species, there is development of sexual glands, and there is a need to associate with the opposite sex. And in nature, the opposite sex has been provided to fulfill that urge. Similarly, there is a natural urge in all human beings, cross-culturally, all over the world, on this planet, that in times of great difficulty or stress or anxiety, there is a tendency, there is a natural urge to turn to some higher power, to pray for mercy, blessings. It is a natural urge. And interesting thing, everyone looks up, Uparwala, right? That means it's a higher power, it's not Nichewala, Uparwala. So this is one way of ascertaining that if it's a natural urge to turn to a higher power in times of distress, etc., or helplessness, there must be a high power, some highest power. Secondly, sorry, creation implies a creator. If you see a beautiful wristwatch as you are walking on the shore of the ocean, on the beach, can you say that the waves were hitting the shore and by chance this beautiful wristwatch manifested by the waves hitting the shore? Would anyone in his sane scientific mind accept that? Such an intricate creation like a wristwatch. So a watch implies a watchmaker. A beautiful chair implies a carpenter. Right? Anything you see, anything around, beautiful creation implies a creator. So if these things in creation all around we see, what we have created implies a creator. What to speak of the most intricate and sophisticated things, like the human being? The most sophisticated computer can't compare any way to what a human being is all about. How can we say that behind this creation there is no creator? I remember we did this program for children one time, high school children, and one of our devotees, he had a greeting card of two roses and some leaves coming out from the stem, and then he had a plastic rose, two roses and some leaves, and then he had the actual rose, you know, two roses with leaves, practically looking alike in the greeting card, the plastic one, and also the real one. And he asked the children, "So do you see this card? What do you see in this rose?" "Oh, in this rose there is color. Okay, only color is there." And then he said, "What is the difference in this?" He showed the plastic rose, and then he said, "Here there is color and there is texture." And then he showed the real rose. And then they said, "This has color, this has texture, this has fragrance, and this has nectar. Squeeze it and it's very juicy." And then he said, "If I were to tell you that I had kept an empty car near the window and there was a storm, windy storm, and therefore the paint box fell down, and by chance this beautiful painting of a rose came about, would any of you believe it?" They said, "Absolutely not." "If I were to say there was some wind that arose and some plastic thing started flying, and by chance this beautiful rose came about, would any of you who are scientifically minded believe that it came by itself? They said, absolutely no, sir. Then how can you say that the actual rose, which not only has color, which not only has texture, but also has such wonderful fragrance and such nectar in it, come about by itself? There is no creator. Does it really make sense? So creation implies a creator. Laws imply a lawmaker. There are so many laws. If you see this whole creation, okay, look at a city. To run a city like Mumbai, so many laws have to be made. Traffic laws, you know, tax laws, so many other laws are there. And that is why, in spite of that, there are so many chaos. You know, so many chaotic situations. Imagine if there were no law in place. What would have happened to the city? Chaotic, isn't it? So, if you look at this creation, from the most microscopic level, take a human cell, a biological cell. If you take one cell, the components inside are more intricate. The things that govern that cell is more intricate and complicated than the city, a very complicated metropolitan city. Inside there is a cell wall to protect foreign bodies from entering. And very much inside the cell there is a nucleus. That's like the headquarters. Now what is happening in the cell? Inside there are all these, you know, chromosomes and all that which carry to reduplicate the cell whatever is necessary. In fact, in one of the chromosomes, the information contained, if it were to be written down in notebooks, the information contained in these chromosomes in one cell, this whole room, this hall will not be sufficient to keep the data written down in notebooks. In this whole hall, this would not suffice. That is the amount of information kept in these chromosomes. Every aspect of a human body, the cells, the size of the nose, the color of the eyes, everything, and it doesn't, you know, go extra or less or more. Such perfection, you know, is there. And go to the most macroscopic level. Look at the solar system. All the planets going perfectly around the sun, all the moons going respectively around the planets. And then there is this, you know, the solar system, and then you have the galaxy, the cluster, the supercluster, and whatnot. So perfect, you can predict an event that is happening, an astrological event that happens, astronomical event, an eclipse that is going to happen 150 years from now. You can predict. It is so perfect. The laws are perfectly governing the movement of each of these planets. And you can predict which day will be a full moon day and which day will be a new moon day. So there's perfect laws. There are physical laws. There are chemical laws. There are thermodynamic laws. So many laws, biological laws. And behind this law, there's no lawmaker. Imagine a city without any laws. One traffic law, imagine what will happen. And to make the laws, how many brains have to be put together to design something? how much intelligence it requires to make some laws and to make sure that these are executed. And this whole cosmic manifestation, from the most microscopic to the most macroscopic level, perfectly, since time immemorial, the laws are perfectly being followed. And we dare say that there is no lawmaker, it's all happening by chance. How absurd, how foolish, how unscientific. And we claim ourselves to be very logical and scientific. How is it? We have no explanation. Nobody can actually give us an explanation of sometimes even a cell function, the brain functions. The topmost scientists in all the fields, when it comes to the natural laws, they are simply amazed, to say the least. How a cell within the embryo multiplies billions of times within a day to create another human body. Perfect replication. So laws imply a lawmaker. There must be a brain, an intelligence to make these laws and to create something. And intelligence means an intelligent person. Alright, so then the next question is, being very scientific, we have to define God, right? Because science begins with definition. Because if you don't define, we may be talking about two different things, and you know, never know what is what. So, what is the definition of God? How do we define God? When I was in high school, I had seen a beautiful cartoon in a magazine. I would like to share with you. This cartoon showed a man, old man, sitting in meditation. And there is a bubble, and that bubble showed Durga Devi sitting on the lioness. And this man is chanting, "Hey Ma, Hey Ma, Hey Ma, Oh Mother, Oh Mother." And the next picture showed his 16-year-old son sitting next to him, and he's also chanting, "Hey Ma, Hey Ma, Hey Ma." And within the bubble it showed a beautiful woman who was the heartthrob of the late 70s and early 80s. I don't know how many of you know her. Hema Malini. So both are chanting Hema, but both have totally different conception of what they are meaning by that. We don't want that here. I speak about God for the 2 hours, and next I ask you, what do you think about God? Yeah, you are God, I am God, tube light is God, fan is God. We don't want that kind of a discussion going on. So right at the outset, I would like to clarify, when I say God with a capital G, what do I mean? Because by definition, things become more clear. Clarity is God. So what I am talking, you're also on the same page, so to say. So, what do we mean by God? How do we define God? God, by definition, is the ultimate source of everything that exists. I have a source, my father and my mother. They have a source, their parents. They have a source, their parents. They have a source, their parents. This chair has a source, a tree. The tree has a source, a seed. The seed has a source, another tree. So take anything, it has a source. And that source has another source. And if you go on tracing it back like that, what is that cause which is the cause of everything, but which has no other cause. If there is anyone, if there is anything which fits this description, that it is the cause of all causes, but it has no other cause, that by definition is what we can call as God. So God by definition is that entity which is the cause of all causes, everything that exists, but which has no other cause. Then the question may arise, just like a very, the hen came first or the egg came first. Typical question. The hen came from the egg came from the hen. But God is that source from whom hen and egg both came. So that is by definition what we call as God. The cause of all causes, who has no other cause. If there is anyone fitting that definition, that is what we call as God. Sarva karana karanam. Sab karanon ke karan jinka koi karan nahi hai. Cause of all causes, who has no other cause. Not only that, God, to be God, should also be the supreme controller. All of us have some control to some extent over some things, to some degree, hopefully. One time I saw a wall plate displayed in a shop, gift shop. And it read, I am the master of this house. And in the bracket it said, I have my wife's permission to say so. So in this world we find, can anyone say, the whole planet is under my control? Not a blade of grass can move without my sanction. Can anyone say that? The whole country, forget about the planet, the whole country is under my control. Whatever I say, exactly that happens. Nothing can happen without my sanction and approval. Forget about a country, a state. Forget about a state, a small locality. Forget about the locality, a small area. At least one's own household. We think we are the controllers. Wait till your children turn teenagers. Then you realize you are helpless. You have no control. Forget about your family. Your own body. There are some part of the nervous system. The voluntary and involuntary nervous system. This has no control. You get an urge to you relieve yourself. Nature's call, and you have no control, you have to rush. You have some control. If you're watching a very beautiful serial, somehow you control for some time. Last over in the cricket match. Wait. But then eventually you have to go to respond to the call of nature. Sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, both are necessary. You have no control over the heart beating. Otherwise, if the heart stops, you can say, nahi, I have an important lecture to give. Chalo rakho, baad mein dekhenge. You can't do that. You have no control over the hair growing. At one time, I was praying, let the hair grow quickly. And now I'm saying, why does it grow? It's a very relative word. So the point is, we realize we are not the controllers of anything in one sense. But God, by definition, is that energy, that source, that personality, who is the supreme controller, who is not controlled by anyone else, who is the controller of all controllers, supreme controller, Param Ishwar. Ishwar means controller, and Parameshwar means the supreme controller. Who is controlled by none, but who controls everything. If he makes a law, no one in this creation can ever break the law and get away with it. But no one can impose laws upon God. If there is anyone who fits that definition, that is what by definition we call as God. Next, God to be God must be the supreme proprietor. He owns everything. One time, I was coming late night, after a late night program, I was going back to my temple, and on the way there is a beautiful restaurant, hotel, and this is around 11:30 at night, and I was crossing the restaurant, I saw a car drive up, and a man get down the car and went to the cashier sitting at the entrance of that restaurant, and he said, "Aska collection nikalo." And he took a bag, put all that cash, and sat in the car and drew away. This is not some dacoit or a holdup. This was just the owner. All others were working, and he would come and just collect the cash and go out there, end of the day. Why? Because he was the proprietor. So the proprietor is actually the full controller. Can we say we are the proprietors of anything in this world? We are not even proprietors of this body. We feel we are tenants. We have taken this body on lease for 99 years. If you are fortunate. Otherwise, we have no control. We have no control in the fact that the body can grow old and you can, no, you can't grow old, I'm the controller. Stop. You can't tell the hair, don't grow. You can't tell the heart, don't beat today. Stop for some time. You can't tell the bladder, wait. It's just happening. According to some natural laws, we are just moving according to that law. And finally, God, to be God, not only is the ultimate source of everything, supreme controller and proprietor, but also the supreme enjoyer. He is a real enjoyer. Bhokta. Bhokta means the enjoyer. Who is the real enjoyer? Real enjoyer is the proprietor. You can enjoy something only if you own it fully. And what is the proof of proprietorship? Proof of proprietorship is control. If I say the car belongs to me and someone says, "Can I borrow the car?" "Sorry, I don't have the key. My wife has it. My boss has it." So what kind of control is that? What kind of owner are you? This house belongs to me, but I have no control over it right now. So proof of proprietorship is control. And the control is only fully possible when you have created something. And you exactly know how it has been created and you have it under your control. So this is God, by definition. Not any Tom, Dick and Harry can call himself God. Really, God means the cause of all causes, the ultimate source of everything, the supreme controller, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme enjoyer. If anyone fits that definition, that is called God with a capital G. Otherwise, he's D-O-G, not G-O-D. Anyone can bark. You know, all these dogs, if you go in their respective lanes, they think they are gods. Apne gali mein hai, are kutta sher banta. Bhav, 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 and suddenly the owner comes and, "Hey, hut." and it just wags its tail and just runs away. Similarly, we may foolishly claim ourselves to be the God, God, God. But in the course of time, old age, disease and death come and say, hey, hut, and we are finished. We are gone. We are simply left some impression on the pages of history, that's all. So God is not so cheap that anyone can just come and say, I am God. Now, alright, now I have the definition. Now let me take the definition and see who fits into this definition. Now that I know who is God, okay, I have a definition. How do I understand who is God here? How do I get knowledge of God? Then the question, how do we get any knowledge at all in the first place? It is described, there are three ways of acquiring knowledge. So what are the ways? The first is, the knowledge acquired could be based on sense perception. It is called pratyaksha praman. Praman means proof. And pratyaksha, aksha means senses. Prati aksha, directly you see. Just like, how do children learn the names for certain objects? So you may say, oh, this is watch. Look at this. That's how parents generally teach. But I look at that. Bus. See, bus, big one is going there. Say bus, and the child says bus, bus, very good. So you see, you touch, you taste, you smell, and then you name it, an object. And by repeatedly connecting that object with the word, you acquire the knowledge. Oh, this is bus, this is a car, this is that, this is a table, this is a watch, this is an animal, this is this. So this is called pratyaksha praman. You see something, you touch something, you taste something, you hear something, and you give it a name, a label. This is called pratyaksha praman. But then, this particular kind of acquiring knowledge through senses alone has some inherent defects. So what are the defects? There are four defects. Anyone who has senses inherently inbuilt within that senses are four defects. What are the four defects? It is said the four defects are imperfect senses. Our senses are imperfect. Why? Because they are limited. Our eyes cannot see anything and everything. It has a range. Beyond that range, it can't see anything. Just like sometimes we see an aeroplane going in the sky and you're looking at it and it just disappears into the sky. That doesn't mean the plane has disappeared. It has disappeared from your line of vision or your range of vision. Something too close, something too far, you can't see. Something too small, you can't see. Through these naked eyes. You can't hear beyond a particular range. The infrasonics and the ultrasonics, you can't hear. There's a particular range. Within that range, 20 to 20,000 hertz, you can hear. Beyond that, you can't hear. The dogs can hear. We can't hear because they have a wider range. So our senses are imperfect because it is limited. It has a limited range. All the senses. That is the first defect. And therefore, one cannot see. Through microscope, through a telescope, you can see something that you can't see through your naked eyes. Then, because of these imperfect senses, We are under illusion. There is what is called as optical illusion, auditory illusion. Right? We have experienced this many a times. We look at someone, one time I was walking in Bombay, Delhi, railway station, and somebody come and slapped me on the back and he said, Hare Krishna, and I looked and I said, oh, sorry. Aap sab ek hi jaise dikhte ho. He misunderstood me for someone else and he called me by that name. And as I looked back, he said, sorry. You know, we have a person in Delhi who just looks like you. We sometimes hear and suddenly we mistake someone has come and then you go out and see someone else. And we experience this. We hear some sound and we think it is something else. Auditory illusion, optical illusion. You smell something and you find out something else. So to be under illusion is another defect of a human being. Thirdly, tendency to commit mistakes. To err is human. The greatest personalities have made some mistakes. Of course, great personalities make big man, big, make big mistakes. Even a small mistake made by a big man makes a big impact because of the person being big or a big in position. But we find that invariably everyone makes some mistakes. Every person conditioned in the conditioned state makes mistakes. And then finally the tendency to cheat. You may say, no, nobody cheats here. But yes, with all these deficiencies, if you claim, I know the absolute truth, you're cheating. You're not a teacher, but you're a cheater. We can say that this is my impression. This is my understanding. I can't say this is the absolute truth for all time, for all people, in all circumstances. Dalton said in 1920, atom is the smallest particle. People died thinking that is the truth. Later they found out atom can be broken down into electron, proton and neutron. Right? So many theories came after that. Today we believe something. Tomorrow, textbooks change every few years. And new information is got. The periodic table is, you know, something is added every few years. Or in all the different levels of, you know, the planets around the sun. Pluto was discovered very recently. They didn't even know Pluto existed. Till somebody found out, oh, it exists. There's another planet that goes around the sun, way back, far end. So we find that that knowledge is not perfect. It will keep adding. So with all these mistakes, with all these defects, how can somebody say that through sense perception, I can understand the cause of all causes, the source of everything? So therefore, this way of acquiring knowledge through pratyaksha praman or direct sense perception has a limitation in understanding the absolute truth or God. The next is based on inference, anuman praman. Anuman is to guess, to infer based on some knowledge. But then, even that has some defects. Because 10 people may see the same thing and conclude 10 different inferences, infer 10 different conclusions. You know, you've all heard the story about the 6 blind men, born blind men, going to see an elephant. So they were born blind and they went to see an elephant. And one touched the tail and he said, oh, I know what an elephant is. The elephant is like a rope. Somebody said, no, the elephant is like a wall. Somebody said, no, elephant is like a sieve. Somebody said, no, he touched the tusk. And he said, oh, it's like a sword, a knife. and someone touched the feet and they said, wow, it's like a pillar. Now tell me, are they right or are they wrong? Yeah, what do you say? Are they right or are they wrong? They're right? So elephant is like a pillar, elephant is like a rope, elephant is like a sieve, elephant is like a wall, but they're giving different statements. How can they all be right? They are partly right but fully wrong. One aspect they are able to access, and based on that, okay, they may speculate, I am only touching one part of the pillar, but it may be a 5 mile long pillar. I may be touching one part of the rope, it may be a big rope. So they have access to one aspect of that elephant, and they may speculate the rest. And because all of them speculate, the conclusion that they all come to may be totally different from another, though the fact is they are all experiencing the same elephant. When I was doing my post-graduation, interdisciplinary conferences were held from various neurology, psychology, speech therapies. They would come together. And amongst us, there was a joke. And the joke was, one time, top specialists from all different branches of knowledge came together for a conference. And during the lunch session, you know, during the break, they had their buffet lunch and everyone was standing on the corridor and just discussing. And across the street, they saw a man limping as he was walking along. And here were the top experts in different fields from the world. And suddenly one man said, looking at the way this man is limping, I know what the diagnosis of his disease is. He was a super specialist neurologist. And he gave a very highly technical diagnosis. This is particular kind of a syndrome consisting of this particular neurological defect, and therefore this particular kind of gait is seen. There was a psychologist next to him. He said, this is not a neurological problem. He is simply mentally challenged. There is no milestone development. And therefore this person is walking like this, this particular gait, walking style. Next was an orthopedic surgeon. He said, this is neither a psychological problem nor a neurological. This is basically an orthopedic problem. This particular bone in this particular joint has been dislocated and therefore is walking like this. In this way, 15 different people gave 15 different suggestions. Ultimately, they said, I think we must confirm firsthand. So they called that person and the man came limping and they said, they introduced themselves. I am so and so, the world famous psychologist, and I feel this is your problem, this is your, and everyone. And then they said, can you please tell us what exactly is the diagnosis of your disease? Is it diagnosis? Disease? What this is? I have no problem. No. We are asking why you are limping like this. He said, oh. He said, I am looking for a cobbler. My Hawaii slipper is broken. And I am dragging my feet just looking for a cobbler, you know, just to get it stitched. Now, this joke was amongst all the specialists to be aware of not to narrowly perceive the whole world based on our little knowledge. This is called frog in the well. This is called being a frog in the well. There are 50 people who have got awards, international awards, for giving fantastic theories about creation. And all of them totally differ from each other. One says the theory of evolution, that the creation is evolving from imperfection to perfection. And the other one says that creation is devolving from perfection to imperfection. Which will you accept? And both give evidences. Just like all these people saw the same phenomena. A man walking on the street limping. They all see the same phenomena, but according to their exposure of knowledge, 450 grams of grey matter, how much can you hold? But they think they know everything. So therefore we find even this inference, or it is called Anuman Praman, even though they may be specialists in their own field, but when it comes to understand the cause of all causes, they may be utterly failing to give a clear understanding of what or who is the cause of all causes, the source of everything, the controller, the supreme proprietor, and the enjoyer. So what is the next option left? The third option is called Shabda Praman, or the word of authority. When we hear from an authorized source, then it becomes much easier to accept. The example is given. Suppose there is a child found on the street, abandoned child, and he's put in an orphanage. And now the child wants to know who my father is. How can anyone know? Do you start doing genetic analysis of all the people on the planet and see which matches? How will you ever know who the child's father is? Now, who is the best authority to tell the child who the father is? The most reliable authority is the mother. If the mother comes and says, "Beta, this is your father," as simple as that. Similarly, to understand the Supreme Father, we need to take shelter of the mother. And the Veda, the Vedic literature, the scriptures are called Mata, because they point to the Supreme Father, the cause of all causes, the source of everything. And therefore, the relevance of scriptures to understand the ultimate Father, the Creator, the person who created everything. Now, how do we understand? How do we know that the scriptures, they are called Vedas? The word Veda comes from the root word Vit. Vit means to know, dhatu. It's the verbal root, Vit. Just like the word Vidwan, Vidya, Vidyalaya. All these come from the root word Vit. Vit means to know. And Veda means the infallible, perfect knowledge. That is the scripture. Why? Why are the scriptures, the Vedic literatures, called infallible? Because it is believed that it is coming from the perfect source. All the genuine scriptures of the world agree that the scriptures are the word of God. And therefore, it exactly tells you what this world is all about. Now, what is the proof again? How do we have faith that The Vedas are perfect. We have so many authorities, but sometimes we find the authorities don't stand the test of time. Over a period of time, those authorities, greatest scientific authorities, have been proven to be wrong. And there are some authorities which contradict themselves. So there are contradicting authorities. There are authorities who themselves change over a period of time. Oh, sorry, amendments are made to the laws, thinking that what it meant was that, but actually now, with more information, we have decided that it is this. Is there an authority that is so perfect that since time immemorial, it has never been changed and it has never been proved to be false? If there is anything that has stood the test of time and never proved to be false, that can be said to be a perfect authority. And the Vedic literatures or the scriptures are considered like that. What is the proof? For example, scriptures which have practically no beginning about its own creation use the word 5,000 years ago. Bhagavad contains, it has a verse which says Sapta Dvipapati Mahi. This was the king 5,000 years ago. He was ruling this earth which had Sapta Dvipa, consisting of 7 islands. Now as late 13th and 14th century, 15th century, the modern science says Columbus discovered America. Before that was not known. But we hear in the scriptures 5,000, and that was recorded 5,000 years ago, but it existed millions of years before. It says Sapta Dvipapati Mahim. Mahim means the earth has Sapta Dvipa. In the literatures, Vedic literatures, the scriptures, the stool of any animal is considered impure. Even if you pass stool, you're not supposed to do some very holy activity. You're supposed to take bath after relieving yourself. What to speak of if you come in contact with the stool of animal or stool of any human being. But it is said that the cow dung is very pure. In fact, to purify a place, you're supposed to use cow dung. What to speak of that? To actually invoke the presence of the Lord in the deity, in the murti, they bathe with pancha gavya, and one of them is cow dung. Water, mixed with water. Cow dung and cow urine, and then milk, curd and ghee, all coming from the cow. And they are considered extremely pure. They are used to purify the place. Now you may say, this is nonsense. On one place the scriptures say, the stool of every animal is considered impure. But the same literature says, cow dung is very pure. Doesn't make sense. But you can't speculate. The cow is okay in the mode of goodness, very sattvic. But human being is more advanced, therefore their stool must be more pure. This is inference, this is wrong inference. It just had to be accepted. In the early days, when people would argue, people would say, why should I follow? Is it Vedavakya? Because if you make scriptural statement, no question of argument, you just accept. It's like a legal, court. According to section 503 of IPC, we just accept. It is state law. Similarly, when scriptures are given, no question of, you accept as it is. So, as late as beginning of the 20th century, late, I think 1920s or 30s, It was found out that cow dung has all the antiseptic properties. In fact, if there is an insect bite, you put cow dung on it, the next day everything is finished. After childbirth, they put cow dung just to purify. Plants having life, it was only established scientifically after J.C. Bose proved that plants have life. But in the literatures, Vedic literatures, you find Sthavara Lakshavimshati, there are 20 lakh species of plants out of the 84 lakhs. This is described. Human embryology as a science came to prominence only after the discovery of radium, when radiology started through X-ray and all that. But 5,000 years ago, the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto consists of from the day of conception till the day of the child birth, within those 9 months, the stages of development from every week is explained in there. Much before any of this modern technology was developed, even ever thought of. And one of our doctors did a parallel study and found out from the scriptures that whatever description is given now, it exactly resembles the description given in a non-medical book, in a philosophical book. The day of conception to the day of childbirth, the whole description, week by week definition. How? In the third month, the organs start developing, organogenesis. Which month, which particular organ develops? In fact, the scriptures give much more detail which science has no access so far. It also says what the child thinks in the womb when it is 6 or 7 months old. That's also described. What the child thinks, what the child expresses, feels. Today, our modern science has no access to that. You know, you put electrodes and study the EEG of the child within the womb and understand what exactly his feelings and thinking, what is he imagining. Even that is described. Right now, modern science has no access to study that aspect. But whatever we have been able to study, it is confirming that this information is... And these are scriptures since time immemorial, carrying every detail. Now you may say, all that is okay. What about the predictions? Just like if you go to an astrologer, suppose a good astrologer, and as soon as you walk inside the room, he just looks at you and he says, "Tumhare do bhai, tu 52 saal ka hai, tera naam ye hai." I said, "Wow, all that is 50%. The next 50% is, bhavishya mein kya hoga, wo to batao. Tell me what's going to happen in the future. Okay, you told me of the past. What about the future?" The amazing thing is, in the scriptures, the predictions are there of the future which have already come true. For example, 5,000 years ago, the book that was compiled, Srimad Bhagavatam, consists, I have given you, for those of you who are interested, that I am not speculating here, I am not just, you know, speaking off my head, I am just giving you the references. The appearance of Buddha, Lord Buddha, where he will appear, what will be his teachings, is described much before even his appearance. Lord Chaitanya, who appeared 500 years ago, that description is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata. even this particular age is called Kali Yuga. Who will be the kings and how it will progress? That has been described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, talking about appearance of, you know, Nanda dynasty, Chanakya and Chandragupta, Ashoka Vardhan, when he will come and what will be the, even that is described. I will give you just one sample of how the scriptures foretell about this particular age that we are living in right now. This age is called as Kali Yuga, as we discussed yesterday. Kali means kalaha. Quarrel and hypocrisy will be the two most prominent features of this age. There will be quarrel amongst people for even most insignificant reasons. For insignificant reasons. Big quarrels and hypocrisy. You are something, you show yourself to be something else. Pretension will be the prominent part of this age, prominent aspect of this age. In this particular Kali Yuga, and in this first verse, this whole chapter describes what will be the prominent features. I'll just give you first verse. It says, Tatascha anudinam dharmaha satyam shaucham tap kshama daya kalena balina raja namshati ayu balam smriti. He said, this is Parikshit Maharaj being told by Shukadeva Goswami. He said, O king, hey Rajan, in this age that is coming now, this is described 5,000 years ago, he said, few things will degenerate day by day. Tatascha anudinam. Anudinam means day by day, there will be degradation. Of what? Dharmaha. Religiosity will reduce because people will become atheistic. If they don't believe in God, where is the question of scripture of God? Laws of God. So tatascha anudinam dharmaha. Satyam. Truthfulness will go away gradually. In the earlier time, once you speak, it is like a line on a rock. Prana jaye par vachan na jaye. Aaj vachan jaye par prana na jaye. It was line on a rock. Even in the villages, you know, five fellows come together, panchayat, and he says, hey, this land belongs to him. Finish. No writing, nothing. Today, even amongst intimate family members, guested officer ka signature karo, tahsildar ka signature karo. Who knows, a person may change. No trust. Today's statements are lying on the water, not on a rock. By the time you finish, it is already. People say, just now you told. 1 hour ago you said, no, I didn't say that. No, you said it. I recorded it. Just see, what I meant was this. So people turn. Tatascha anudinam dharmaha satyam. Shaucham, cleanliness will go away. Cleanliness of consciousness, cleanliness of the body, cleanliness of the mind will go away. Kali Yuga will be such. Earlier, people used to, you know, stool and urine are considered impure. People used to go far away from house and release it. When I was young, in the houses, at least it would be away. The toilet would be away. Today it is right next to the kitchen. What can you do with one, you know, one room attached, bathroom and flat? What will you do? Satyam, shaucham, kshama, people's tolerance will reduce. People can't tolerate anything that is not expected, and expectations are so high They can't tolerate anything less here and there. 2-3 years back, I read in the newspaper, in the matrimonial court at Bandra, there was a case. The lady filed for divorce. And what was the cause? The husband told her, please change the hair oil that you use. She said, no, I'm not going to eat. And therefore, they're filing for divorce. This was the cause. I don't know how true or whatever it was. She was ready to change her husband, but not her hair oil. That's what it means. They can't tolerate. He couldn't tolerate this fragrance of the oil, and she couldn't tolerate his telling to her to change. So, satyam shaucham, kshama, tolerance is not there. And daya, mercy will be lost. A mother will not hesitate to murder her own child in the name of just removing a tissue. It will be covered under a very nice name of removing a tissue, as if it doesn't exist. If it's a tissue, how is it growing? So a child in the womb will be aborted. In fact, it has become law. It was a big thing in the parliament. First time it was introduced. Now it is perfectly allowed. Satyam shaucham kshamadaya. Kalena balina rajan. By the influence of time, O king, nangshati, degrade, ayuhu. People's lifespan will reduce. People's lifespan will reduce. A time will come when 20-year-old person will be considered grand old man. And we find it nowadays, especially in the software. I was just reading a few months back, in Chennai, Bangalore, most of the software places, Hyderabad, people are dying at their 30s, earning very big amount, but just because of stress, heart attack and all this happening 30 years, 30, 30s, 40s, that's all. Very common. Nangshati ayu, people's lifespan will reduce. Balam, people's strength will reduce. Strength will reduce very soon. Even vitality, today we find people are so much prone to diseases. I know at least my second generation, preceding, they were like 90-year-old and still on their own 2 feet, walking and still original teeth, and moving around on the, they would be more active doing things, household activities. But today, if somebody is nearing, then we may put it in the Guinness Book of World Records, still surviving, blowing his own candles on the 91st birthday. It's very difficult now. You can't survive. And people have no strength. One time I gave this lecture, and after that one man came and told me, Swamiji, I will tell you some information. I said, what? He said, in Hyderabad you have the Salar Jung Museum, very famous it seems, where they have the armor that soldiers would wear 400 years ago. Very, built of totally iron and sword weighing about 25 kilos. And they were wearing this armor which is about 60, 70 kilos or whatever, and taking this 25 kilo thing, and they would be fighting. And for a movie called Mughal-e-Azam, Prithviraj Kapoor, it seems he decided to make it really, natural. So he said, I will wear it and then, fight it. So he borrowed it. And when he wore it, he just couldn't get up. Forget about lifting. And then it seems, maybe they made the armor of thermocol and painted it, gave it an iron finish. So the point is, people's vitality will reduce. So much prone to diseases, so much prone to, you know, strength is lost. If you sit too long, sitting is different. If you sit too long, standing is different, difficult. It's a rule nowadays, sixth floor, you have to have lift. No permission is given otherwise. I find it so difficult after some time to just climb the staircase and get down. It's a fact of life. Somehow, the food, the whole environment is such. So, Namshati, Ayu, Balam, and Smriti. Memory will reduce. You could hear once anything and you were able to retain it in the previous ages. They were called Shruti Dhar. Shruti means hearing and Dharan means to hold. Once heard, they were like imprinted in the heart, imprinted in the memory. But today even a phone number you can't, 982-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8-8- on. But people had that ability. Hold it. Hold many information at the same time. In fact, one of my friends, he said that he's from Andhra Pradesh. Some place in Karnool. He was my classmate. His father told him that in their village, they used to have a competition of Shrutidhar. Shrutidhar means who can hold more information at the same time. And there used to be competition. And what was the competition? There will be 100 people sitting, and that man who is supposed to be examined, he sits on the chair in front of 100 people. And 100 people randomly ask 100 different questions. And this person is supposed to hear all the questions. Somebody asked here, first question, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seven, eight. 100 people ask 100 questions. Anything under the sky they can ask. And this person is to hear all of them. And after all the 100 questions are over, he's supposed to start replying in the order. He must say, you asked the first question, your question was this, and the answer is this. You asked the second question, your question was this, and the answer was this. If he can hold 100 questions, he's called Shatavadhani. Shata Avadhan. We say na Savadhan. Savadhan means attention. So Shatavadhani means one who can hold 100 pieces of information at a time. And during all this session, behind him there is someone ringing a bell. Tong, tong, tong. At the end of the whole session, he has to tell how many times the bell was rung. If he can do that, imagine the presence of mind, imagine the retention power, imagine the memory power to actually not only grasp, hold it, but to actually recall. And 15 years ago it was held in Matunga. And the person who got the medal was who could hold 8 information. And he was like a champion. Yesterday, a gentleman from behind asked me 2 questions. I said, wait, first question first. We are all Kali Yuga creatures. Very difficult to remember. But just because we can't do it, things look that, oh, these are all nana nani ki kahani. Practical nahi ya, aajkal kona sa kar sa. But we find, even next generation, we find that there is a difference in terms of so many other aspects. So this is just a small sample to you about how scriptures so perfectly foretell the predictions of the future events that are going to unfold with the passage of time. So, Veda means the original and infallible body of knowledge. That's called Veda, coming from the dhatu root, vid, that means to know. It is also called Shruti. Shruti means heard in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. The teacher tells the student remembers, he teaches the next student, the next student, the next student. In this way, in an unbroken chain, this was communicated by sound. Only 5,000 years ago, first time it was documented, knowing that people's memory span will go down. Otherwise, before that, it was not written, it was communicated by word of mouth. They are also called a Paurusheya. Purusha means human being. Paurusheya means manufactured by human being. A Paurusheya means the scriptures are not made by humans. It is not manufactured. These truths are eternally existing by purity and by submissiveness to the authority. One can access this information. It is not manufactured. Newton's law of gravity doesn't mean that Newton created the law. Newton found out the law, discovered the law. Apples used to fall even before Newton. I was in Cambridge 2 years back, and when a person took me on a sightseeing tour, he showed me the tree under which Newton was sleeping when this was in Cambridge. He was from Cambridge University, London. But doesn't mean that before that apples would go up in the air. They would fall. But he found out and labeled the law. He's not Newton created the law. If you destroy all the books of physics in the whole planet, the laws don't stop to exist. If you break the watch, it doesn't that time stops. Similarly, the laws are always there. It is grasped by pure souls and it is communicated in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. That's how the knowledge is handed over and transferred. Scripture is compared to an instruction manual. Very interesting. When you buy a product from a shop, along with the product, the manufacturer gives you a manual, whether it is some medicine, whether it is a computer or a camera, whatever, some electronic gadget or some kind of drugs, meaning medicines, because drugs may have what kind of connotation today. So anything you buy, the manufacturer gives you a manual, a sheet of paper, which tells you what is the purpose of this particular product, do's and don'ts, how to maintain this product, what to do if something goes wrong, how to set it right, and whom to approach to get it done. Similarly, it is said, when God created this, He made this creation, He sent the manual. And the manual tells, what is the purpose of this creation? How it runs? What are the do's and don'ts, prescriptions and prohibitions, vidhi and nishedh? And what to do when something goes wrong? how to set it right. And sometimes when you can't do it, dharma samsthapanarthaya paritranaya sadhuna vinashati dushkata. The manufacturer himself comes and sets it right. So, the manual gives you the purpose of this product. Here why, this is why it was created. This is the purpose of this creation, product. Take this creation as a product. Take this body as a product. How to use this body? Do's and don'ts. What to do, what not to do, when to do, when not to do, how to do, how not to do. Why to do, why not to do. And if things go wrong, how to set it right. So scripture is nothing but a manual. Now the $1 million question. Then why different scriptures? And why different scriptures see apparently give different instructions? Imagine a manufacturer produces one product and to different people gives different manual. Isn't that, you know, contradictory? Same manufacturer, same product, but to different people he gives different manuals. So if God is one, the creation is the same, why there are different scriptures? And if everyone says that God revealed this truth, it was revealed by the Holy Ghost. In the beginning was the Word was God, the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Bible says this. So, how do we understand? If God is one, the creation is one, why are there different scriptures? Different scriptures are meant for different audience and are revealed according to time, place, and circumstance. The product is the same, but it is revealed at different times to different people according to the level of their understanding. However, the essence is always the same. The details may vary, but the essence is always the same. They don't vary. All the bona fide scriptures of the world agree that the Supreme Lord is only one. He created this creation. And there is a purpose behind this creation. The essence is to actually surrender to Him. Love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Moses has given 10 commandments. He was asked, Jesus was asked, what is the essential commandment? Love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. And love means surrender. The word Islam means surrender. The conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Braja. So we find that the essential instructions remain the same. However, the details may be different. Then why are there so many differences of opinion? So much of fight in the name of religion. In every religion, there are two types of people. The conservatives and the liberals. Very conservative and very liberal. Now the conservatives are concerned about conserving the principles, not compromise the principles. And the liberals are concerned that we should be liberal about the details. For example, the principle is one should respect a respectable object. This is the principle. One should respect one's elder, one should respect God, whatever. And the detail is how you show, whether you fold your hand, whether you bow down, whether you fall flat. This is a detail. But the essential principle is one should show respect. So conservatives are concerned about conserving the principles, and the liberals are concerned about, be liberal about the details, don't be a stickler to the details. But when the conservatives become conservative not only about the principles but also every aspect of the detail, they become fanatics. They become fanatics. And when the liberals, in the name of liberality, are so liberal that they become liberal about the principles also, then everything is diluted and compromised. And therefore, a deep understanding of the essence and the principles of scriptures is the must. Without that, we fall prey to any one of these extremities. Either a person becomes completely fanatic, or a person becomes completely compromised, diluted, and deviated. And so therefore, the question is, how do I understand the principle? What is the essence of the scriptures? Because once you understand the principle, you know how to apply it according to time, place, and circumstance. And therefore, okay, before that, the example is given of different levels of the audience. According to different levels of audience, there are different levels of scriptures. For example, there are different types of dictionaries. You have a pocket dictionary consisting of 5,000 most often used words. You have a 17-volume, unabridged dictionary. Now tell me, in a dictionary, is the meaning in a pocket dictionary different from the meaning in an unabridged edition? Yes or no? No? Are they the same? Then why are they two different? In a pocket dictionary, most often used words and one or two of its meanings are given. That's why it is meant for a different purpose, to be kept in the pocket. Easy referral. Then there is an unabridged 17-volume Webster's dictionary. It contains how this word originated, what are the different, variations of this, and what it has undergone a change, all the different connotations that can be used and different usages. Whole detail. Sometimes it may run for pages, one particular word may run for pages. So in principle, the meaning may be the same, but the detail may vary. If you see the Vedic literatures, they contain lakhs of verses. For example, in the Bible, there is one chapter, creation, and it gives, how God created the first day, the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day. So in one chapter, the whole essence is given. This is how God created. And if you read the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, first and second cantos, pages and pages and chapters of creation. From the most subtle, from Omkara, sound came all these things, and from there, subtle to the grossest manifestations. But what is the principle? The principle is, God desired that the creation be there, and the creation came about. Principle remains the same. Behind the creation, there is a creator. As simple as that. And he desired, and therefore the creation came about. He created. Now the detail of how exactly the whole creation takes place, and at the time of annihilation, how it winds up like a spring going back, elaborately discussed. But the principle remains the same. It's like an explanation of an expert physician. If a child comes and says, uncle is a big physician, or a MD surgery, And a child comes and says, "Uncle, can you please tell me what exactly happens when you eat food?" Looking at the child, the surgeon may say, "Beta, when you eat food, it goes into the belly and you get a lot of strength, and what is not needed is thrown out." If a 10th standard boy comes, "Uncle, tomorrow is my biology study. Can you please explain what exactly happened when you eat food?" Then you may say, "It goes into the pharynx, and then it goes into the esophagus, and then it goes into the, you know, intestine, the large intestine and the small intestine. It is broken down into amino acids and this and fat and all this stuff. And then whatever is not required is thrown out." And if another surgeon comes to him and says, "Excuse me, my dear friend, there is a case of food poisoning and I've already opened up. Suddenly I have a question. If this kind of food is ingested, what kind of a reaction it has?" And he may go into elaborate detail, highly technical. But the essence is the same. When the food is taken, whatever is utilized is utilized, whatever is not utilized is thrown out. Essence is the same. But depending upon who is the person in the audience, a person reveals it according to time, place, circumstance and the level of the audience. So therefore we find that different scriptures may define these things to different degrees, but the principles remain the same. Now, we discuss about the principles and the details. Now, who is to explain to us as to what are the essential principles? Therefore, it is described the need to hear from a spiritual authority, the need of a guru, a need of a spiritual teacher. Just like any other branch of knowledge. I remember one of our colleagues, he took these yoga lessons of Ramdev Baba's CD. Somebody gave him a CD and he actually put it on the laptop and he started doing. And he had a major problem. He had to undergo some surgery. You know, this Gita Press, they bring out different ankh. Swasthya Ankh, Nari Ankh, Bhakti Ankh, you know, different volumes. And one is Swasthya Ankh, all about Swasthya. And then it says, "Dekha dekhi sadhe jog, chije kaya bade rog." Dekha dekhi sadhe jog. If you want to do yoga, better learn under some proper authority. Otherwise, you end up with some problem. For the rest of your life, you may be miserable. Even ordinary things, you need a particular teacher. What to speak of the most subtle, at the same time the most important aspect of our life, to understand the scriptures, which is not just another material subject, it's a spiritual subject, it's most subtle, and therefore it needs proper guidance, proper authority. And even though you may have the best authority, you may have the best guru, but if you are not the best shishya, you can't access that knowledge. The best farmer may be there, the best seeds he may have, but if the ground is not fertile, the crops will not grow. Similarly, the best guru may be there. He may have the best message. But if the heart of the disciple is not fertile, not receptive, this information or this knowledge cannot hold, cannot be accessed, cannot be assimilated. And even if assimilated, it can't be retained. And even if retained, it can't grow. And therefore, even if you have a best teacher, you have to be the best student. So what are the qualifications of a student? According to the scriptures, he has to have three qualifications minimum. One is submissiveness, pranipatena. Unless a person is humble, unless your pot is empty, it can't be filled, it will just overflow. We may be experts in our own field of knowledge. We may be respected for our knowledge, material knowledge. But when we approach a spiritual guide for spiritual knowledge, the first and foremost qualification is humility. I am a fool number one. I don't know. If this is the attitude of a person, it is most fertile soil for the seed of a good knowledge to take ground. Secondly, inquisitiveness, a genuine seeker, open-mindedness to question, to understand. It's not that, okay, the wall is black. Yes. Why? Because you are saying. Now you may ask, I see it is white and you are saying it is black. Can you please tell me why you say it is black? Because unless you really understand and are convinced, how will you be able to practice it? So a student, it is not that humble means foolishly accept blindly anything and everything. One has to question, why? Why not? And why this? But this question should not be impudently asked. A humble, inquisitiveness is the perfect qualification. Not to question or doubt or not to test the authority, but to grasp the subject matter properly with conviction. And thirdly, a proper service attitude. What does that mean, having a proper service attitude? A sincere desire to apply this knowledge to the best of our ability in our life. Otherwise, it is not a spiritual entertainment. This is not just a speculation. It's a very serious matter. Just like when you go to a surgeon for a heart operation, you know it's a very serious matter, serious affair. A sincere seeker really wants to understand and apply it to the best of his or her ability. So anyone who has these three qualifications, being submissive, being inquisitive, and genuine service attitude, a desire to apply it, very soon this knowledge can hold ground and bear fruit within the heart of such a student. In fact, the word disciple means discipline. Shishya means shishtachar. So the guru may be best. You may have the best guru, but unless we are best disciples, we will not be able to take advantage of the information. Finally, there are so many literatures, Vedic literatures. In fact, before that, I would like to tell you, Veda, we discussed about Veda, right? The conclusion of Veda is Vedanta. Vedanta means the conclusion of Veda, Veda Anta. And they are called Upanishads. You know why they are called Upanishads? The word Upanishad has three, it can be broken into three words. Upa means near, Ni means under, and Shat means to sit. These conclusion of Vedic knowledge can only be understood by approaching a realized personality. So that is upa. Upa means to go near. You have to approach. It's not that you can Google that information. You have to actually approach a person. Theoretically, you may get that knowledge, but practical realization cannot come unless a physical approach is there, or a sincere desire to get that knowledge is there. So, first is upa means near, ni means under, to take a humble position. There is a reason why the speaker of Vedic literatures or scriptures is given a higher seat. One is practical reason. Otherwise, how can everyone see? If you see it's underground, you know, it will be Akashvani. You only hear the sound. But another thing is, we also take a humble position. Because knowledge flows as electricity or water flows from a higher potential to low potential, higher place to a lower place. Of course, it doesn't mean simply, you know, sitting 3 inches niche. Sometimes we may sit in the balcony also. That's perfectly all right. Really what it means is approaching with a humble heart. That I really don't know. I want to learn. I want to apply it. The humility is important. Humility of the heart. Ni means under. That means under the supervision of a higher authority. And third is shat. Shat means to be fixed. We can't be just, you know, restless. A restless person can never understand. We have to be fixed to actually understand this knowledge. Now, there are so many scriptures in this Vedic literature, there are so many Puranas, so many Upanishads, Veda, Atharva, Yajurveda, Rig, Yajur, Sama, Atharva, Upanishads, Aranyakas, Samhitas. And all of these are in Sanskrit. When will I ever understand? First I have to learn the Sanskrit, I have to learn the knowledge, I have to all learn the grammar, then break the head against all this tough knowledge. Upanishad language is also very tough. Tadejati, tannejati, taddure, tadvantike, tadantarasya sarvasya, tadusarvasya sebahyataha. Ishopanishad. It says, tadejati, talking about God, it says, he runs, tannejati, but he doesn't move from his place. Taddure tadvantike. He is farther than the farthest, but nearer than the nearest. Tadantarasya sarvasya. He is situated within the heart of every living entity. Tadu sarvasya sebahyatah. Simultaneously, he is outside. He runs, but he doesn't move from his place. He is inside, he is outside. He is farther than the farthest, nearer than the nearest. Maharaj, koi ek cheez bolo. दूर बोलो या पास बोलो, अंदर बोलो या बाहर बोलो, आधा अंदर आधा बाहर, ऐसे कैसे? To your rational intelligence, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. Therefore, we need to have faith. Somewhere we need to make a leap of faith. To the best of your intelligence, you can use your logic. But trying to understand the metaphysical, before realizing that knowledge with full conviction, you need to make a leap of faith. In every field of knowledge, suppose you go to a doctor and you say, and the doctor says, take this medicine. First you remove my disease, then I will develop faith in you, then I will take your medicine. It doesn't work like that. You have to have some faith. You see how many people go to visit the doctor and how many come out successfully. You test him, see whether he has a bona fide degree. But to take the medicine, you need to have some faith. And that faith will become realization when you take the medicine and see some difference. And so therefore, when will we have in this lifespan to study all the scriptures? We don't have time. Therefore it is said, for this day and age, there are some scriptures which are exclusively meant for this day and age. Of all the scriptures. And what is that? The Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam are considered part of the Vedic literature. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo. The Upanishads are compared to a cow. Vedanta, the conclusion of all Vedas, Upanishad, is compared to a cow. Dogdha Gopalanandana. Gopalanandana, Krishna, is churning milking the cow, Upanishadic cow. Partho Vatsaha. Arjuna is compared to a calf. Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahat. And the nectarian milk is compared to the Gita, the message of the Gita. So the Upanishadic cow is being churned by the cowherd boy Krishna using Arjuna as a calf. The calf is allowed to take milk from the cow and the rest of the milk is distributed for everyone. Similarly, using Arjuna as the calf, the cowherd boy Krishna churned the essence of the Upanishadic cow and gave the essence of that Upanishads in the form of Gita Upanishad or Bhagavad Gita. And so therefore, this Gita is like a law book and Bhagavat is like a law journal. A law book contains crisp laws. You know, section 403 IPC, Indian Penal Code, whatever. And a law journal quotes a historical incident. So and so broke the law and the government, they went to the court and this decision was made. So through the incident you understand what the law is. So Gita is like a law book. There are no stories. It is just crisp, concise, philosophical conclusions. And Bhagavad contains so many stories from the history of this planet, which talks about incidents where somebody followed the law, what was the benefit? Somebody broke the law, what was the result, consequence? Through that, we are able to appreciate the law themselves. So in this way, why did we do this exercise? We did all this exercise because we want to know, behind this creation, is there a creator? And why do we want to know who the creator is? So we can catch him and say, Kya tune duniya banai? Why did you make this world with so many defects? This product has so many manufacturing defects. Catch hold of the manufacturer, if there is any. Or, if you are not able to understand, study the manual. And the manual says, this product is designed to give you trouble. If you put a pressure cooker and then you put, Hare, why this is coming? And then you see, after 5 minutes of steam, put the weight. Oh, acha, acha, acha. See, something like this. So this is the manual. So the whole idea is, what does this manual say about who is the cause of all causes, source of everything, the controller, proprietor, enjoyer? That will be the discussion tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll be discussing, really, who is that creator? Is there really a creator? And who is he? Is there only one creator, or there are millions of creators? One god or many gods? Especially in India. One lady asked me, Swamiji, please tell me how many gods? My daughter is always troubling me. Mama, what is this? You have a Monday god and a Tuesday god and a Wednesday god, Friday god. Why can't you be chaste to one? Shh, Beta, don't talk like this. Everything is all right. Everyone is same. If everyone is same, why so many pictures? She said, I'm not able to answer. Can you please explain? So sometimes, especially in India, a lot of confusion regarding, first of all, does really God exist? And if it is, who is that? Is it one? Is it many? What's the relationship? The Upanishads say very clearly, Eko Bahushyama. Our Supreme is only one. And why there are so much confusion? So that will be the discussion tomorrow. So we'll stop here. If there are any questions, clarifications and comments about what we have discussed today, you are welcome to clarify. Yeah, can you pass the mic? One question, because we are already, I am available, whatever time is okay, I am available, till you want to be here, I am there. So please feel free to ask, because but we have already crossed time. One question will take. Yes. Service attitude.
So when this the Gita, Arjuna was having all the qualities, all three qualities. Even though at the last, he was not, agreed to fight the war. Then at last, God showed him his heart. Then he came to know, oh, this is the truth. Here, very simple and very common man.
Actually, we'll be covering it on the last day, most of what you're asking. The thing is, somebody may say, all right, for Arjun, at least personally Krishna was there. What about me? So that is described, that's what I was telling. Just like, I need electricity, okay, to run the projector, to run the fan, to run the light, to run the microphone, whatever. I need electricity. Now, where do I get electricity? The electricity is produced, many miles away in the main generator. Huge amount of electricity is produced, and then it is transferred through wires, through huge towers. Right? You see this, right? And then the towers come closer to the city. From there the smaller wires come, and from there one of them comes here at the plug point, right here available, you can access. Now suppose there are 10 plug points, 9 of them are not connected, one of them is connected. How do you know which one is connected and which is not? Very simple, put your finger. Very costly experiment. Right? One of them is connected. So, what is the proof? When you plug in, depending upon, if it's a light, it will glow. If it's a fan, it starts giving air. If it's a microphone, it starts expanding the voice or it does function according to its nature. Original nature. So, in this example, the generator can be compared to God. The wire carrying the electricity can be compared to His message. And the towers that bring the wire can be compared to an unbroken chain of Guru Shishya. They are transferring the message. They are like the sadhus. Yesterday I told you, Shastra is the wire, Sadhus are the towering personalities who carry that message in an unbroken chain. And the Guru is the current connection through which you access and get that same electricity that is produced. And in between there are transformers, because there is a electricity loss, transmission loss. So there are step-up transformers, which again bring it to the same level. So you need Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. These are the checklists by which we can confirm. And the final confirmation is the Lord in the heart, as we were discussing yesterday. There may be so many voices, but that voice which coincides and matches with the external, that is like confirmation that this is the voice I must follow. And that voice should be cultivated and the other voice should be subdued. In American language they say, a good dog and a bad dog. In everyone's heart, there is a good dog and a bad dog. That's a American way of mentioning. There are so many other voices, and then there is the voice of the Lord in the heart, Paramatma. So you need to understand who that voice is. So many voices, you don't know. Right now we may not be in a position to discriminate what is the right voice. You confirm it through these three checklists. If all the three also conclude similar thing, then you know that this voice is the right voice, and then you move ahead in that. So that's the way of. Obviously, faith will be tested. Faith will be tested. So you have to do full research, just like going to a doctor. You have to have faith in the doctor before you. But before going, find out. Just like suppose I am going to buy gold. If I have no knowledge of what gold looks like, I may be cheated in the market. So before I go to purchase gold, I must at least find out what gold looks like and how to test gold. And once I find out, then I go to the market and somebody tells me this is gold. I kind of test it, I see it, and then I take it. Just because somebody may cheat you doesn't mean that gold doesn't exist. Go elsewhere and try. The path should go. I want to get gold. I know what gold looks like. So I'll go on. The process will go on till I find gold. Don't worry. If there is sincerity in the heart, it is said, by the mercy of God, one gets a guru. And by the mercy of guru, one gets God. Because the Lord is seated in our heart also. When he sees that we are sincere, you don't have to go search for a guru. The guru comes and knocks at your door. And when a guru comes, the Lord speaks from within. Here it is, grab it. Grab this opportunity. This is what you have been asking for. So by the mercy of God, you get a guru. And by the mercy of guru, you get God. So you should have faith. But this is the axiomatic truth. This is the process. You have to have somewhere. You begin somewhere. And the journey will be adventurous. Don't worry. It will be very exciting. Okay, thank you. I think we'll conclude here. I'm sure many of you may have questions. I'm ready. I'm available. It's late already. Could we take? I'm here. We can discuss. But I think many have to go. Some have come from Dadar and Bandra. I don't want to hold them. Maybe tomorrow I'll stop a little early so that we'll have more question answers. Scope. Thank you very much.